Apple began taking pre-orders for this iPhone X last week. The waiting times went from November 3rd, so this Friday is the first date that you're going to be able to go and actually pick them up in the store. But the waiting times quickly extended to 4 weeks and 6 weeks in many markets, including in the U.S. Now, what we don't know is whether that's a sign of overwhelming demand for the phone or underwhelming supply. And that's what Apple, as you mentioned, said that demand has been off the charts at this point. But we know there have been some challenges in putting together this phone because of its high-tech specs.
This is a very difficult problem. As Facebook is trying to experiment with what might work for stomping down fake news, it is becoming even more widespread and international. The company right now with these third-party fact-checkers has this dashboard where they have to go in and individually mark whether stories are true or false. And there's not a lot of machine learning or tech actually involved in it.
SoftBank getting cold feet over a deal to merge Sprint with T-Mobile. That's according to a source familiar with the matter. Worries the long-talked-about marriage won't ever happen immediately hit shares of both telecom companies Monday. Sprint dropped around 9% and T-Mobile around 5%. SoftBank owns a majority of Sprint while Germany's Deutsche Telekom owns a majority of T-Mobile, and the two had been working out a merger.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Halloween. Today is Tuesday. It's the 31st of October, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for our latest edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. And we've got a really good show for you this morning. A little bit later in the program, should you be talking about your salary with other people? Well, there's a new body of research that suggests maybe you should, to find out if you're getting paid enough. We will have a conversation about that in the second half of our show. We'll bring in our first guest momentarily. Mike Gallagher's here from the Entertainment Software Association. We'll talk about the business of gaming and video games. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures pointing toward opening gains later this morning, up about 37 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. In Asia, markets generally are mixed to negative this morning. Markets retreated from their record highs overnight. China reported weak manufacturing data. The Nikkei off is flat this morning now, but the Hang Seng is off almost a third. The Shanghai is up just a fraction. In Europe, markets are generally higher, with everything just up just a fraction. The FTSE, as an example, just up about 25 points. The CAC up just about 4 points. Oil trading 54.13 a barrel, which is down just a couple of pennies. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. An official survey says Chinese manufacturing activity expanded in October at a slower pace than previous month as output weakened. The Purchasing Managers Index released yesterday fell to 51.6 from 52.4 that released overnight. Official figures this morning show that the robust economy and economic recovery across the 19-country Eurozone persisted during the third quarter, helping employment there fall to a near 9-year low. Here in this country, waiting for tax cuts information. That's scheduled to come out tomorrow. The latest schedule shows that a full bill is expected to be released tomorrow on that. Samsung Electronics has three executives who served for the South Korean company for more than two decades will replace three outgoing chief executives. The appointment announced in the middle of Samsung's run of record-breaking blockbuster earnings shows it has opted for stability rather than a big shakeup in its corporate structure. Well, the video gaming industry is big bucks. We're talking billions and billions of dollars in the U.S. and globally. Mike Gallagher is president and CEO of Entertainment Software Association and is with us this morning. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve, and happy Halloween to Chicago.
Thank you. A very, very scary greeting from you this morning. This is not scary. Your industry is not scary at all, is it? I mean, we're talking billions. I didn't want to steal your thunder by telling us how much it's worth, but give us a ballpark.
So worldwide, the market for video games has expanded to a $100 billion industry, which is bigger than motion pictures and music combined. Here in the U.S., it's over $30 billion. You have over 2,000, nearly 3,000 companies all around the country making video games and driving that growth. And you have consumers, 2/3 of households play games. 67% of households have at least one device where at least one person plays for 3 hours a week. So it's a widespread phenomenon. There are more gamers. 72% of gamers are over the age of 18. The average age is 35. This industry is in the sweet spot of consuming entertainment and of tech innovation, and it's growing at about 12% a year all around the world. And looking ahead, we have great technologies like esports and virtual reality, mixed reality, that are on the horizon that are driving us to even higher levels of excitement and consumer engagement.
What is driving this? Is it the technology that has advanced, or is it the originality of the games, or a combination of them?
I think what it comes down to is innovation that's focused on great experiences for consumers. If you innovate for innovation's sake, it ends up going on a shelf somewhere. But if it's really exciting, really fun to use, something that consumers just can't stop doing, that's when you get the powerful market dynamics that I just described. So I think it's a combination of great technology and a great experience for the gamer so that he or she are really, really excited about what they're doing, and they get their interest piqued over and over again about what's coming next.
You talked about the different sorts of technology involved here. Is there one gaming device that's driving all of this, or is it pretty competitive?
It's very competitive across multiple platforms. So just this year, we have consoles, the things that connect in your home. Now they also go with you on the go. We had the debut of the Nintendo Switch in March, which has been incredibly positive, very good news out of Nintendo in their earnings. And people are the excitement level for that's very high. And then next week, we're going to have the reveal of the consumer hands of the new Xbox One X. So in the console space, there's enormous competition, innovation. PlayStation is the current market leader with the PlayStation 4 out in the market doing very, very well. You also have other areas of growth like mobile. On mobile, this is the worldwide growth opportunity for the industry on mass numbers is on smartphones, because statistics show that right behind making a phone call, right behind sending a message, the next most popular thing to consumers is playing games. 80% of the revenue in the Apple App Store and in Google Play, 80% is video game revenue. So worldwide, there's great growth there. And then on your PC, there's an enormous industry around PC gaming, and you see it reaching its peak in engagement on things with esports. So it's across all of those verticals you see great growth.
You mentioned Xbox. It's no coincidence that new console is coming out right before Christmas, I bet.
Absolutely. When you have physical product, it's driven by a quarterly approach that's focused on the holiday season. And now we have also the benefit of software business models that span the whole year. So what gets sold in December gets monetized and played for 12 months, not just for two.
Mike, hang on with us. We're going to continue our conversation with Mike Gallagher this morning. He's the president and CEO of Entertainment Software Association. We're going to talk about how competitive this area is in terms of maybe finding a job if you're one of these software developers or game developers. And we'll see how big of a business this is for Illinois coming up here on The Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the major indexes finished lower on Monday. The Dow Jones gave up 85 points to close at 23,348. The S&P 500 was down 8.25. The Nasdaq backed away from its record high to end the trading session 2 points lower at 66.98. Facebook, Google, and Twitter are set to divulge new details about the scope of Russian-backed manipulation on their platforms before and after the 2016 presidential election. The tech firms acknowledge it was far greater than previously disclosed. Latest figures suggest that you're feeling good about the economy. Consumer spending rose 1% last month, the biggest gain in 8 years. Demand was strong in the auto sector after Hurricanes Harvey and Irma damaged hundreds of thousands of cars. It's only Halloween, but retailers are already looking ahead to Black Friday. Ads that have leaked from Kohl's have the department stores opening at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day, an hour earlier than last year. Samsung 55-inch smart TV for $499. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Mike Gallagher's here this morning. He's the president and CEO of the Entertainment Software Association, talking about the business of gaming. Mike, before the break, we were talking about this sort of as a global picture of the economy and how much money it generates. What's the snapshot for Illinois? How's Illinois doing in this area?
So Illinois is one of the leaders in the country when it comes to game making and ability to drive the market. So just to give you a sense of that, we have nearly 3,000 video game companies and nearly 500 universities that have either curricula, degrees, or certificates in getting a degree in making video games. The reason they do that, there's over the average wage in the video game industry is $97,000 a year. Today, you've got parents that are very, very interested in their kids breaking into the industry. They see that as a real growth opportunity. Focusing in on Illinois, you have 97 companies and 19 universities, and going in even tighter on Chicago, that number is 67 video game companies and 9 universities that are in this ecosystem of making interactive entertainment, which makes it one of the leading hubs. And it's really important when it comes to public policy that the right decisions get made for that to continue to grow.
Is this a mix of, when you talk about the education programs here, the college programs, it seems it would be a mix of education or technology and also entertainment, right? I mean, they have to learn both.
They have to learn both, and the idea is for them to come out and get a job right away in the industry, be onboarded into a great company. So it's a combination of really, really strong computer science, math, and a STEM-related background, so engineering, science, math, that type of background, then combined with really strong artistic skills to make the magic that happens on the screen that's so exciting, to come up with the storylines and the designs and the elements that make that really, really top of the world experience.
Is it a tight job market to get into?
It's extremely competitive because you can imagine that anybody who's really, really good in computer science and also good at interacting, working with interactive approaches to consumers across the entire economy, that transformation's been going on for some time, and there's quite a market out there for those talented individuals with that background.
I know that you're watching very closely what happens in Washington, not only with taxes, but with trade. How big of an impact do trade policies have on your industry?
So it's tax, talent, and trade are the engines that drive our industry. I'm sure tax we'll talk about in a minute, quite top of mind, a lot happening in Washington this week on that. On trade, we realize 5% of the world's consumers live in the U.S., 95% live outside the U.S. When we look at the size of the video game market, we don't just look at the 320 million people that live in the U.S. We look at the 7 billion people around the globe. It's 7.5 billion. And only 2.6 billion are playing games. So we have a lot of growth in front of us, but it's all around the world where the opportunity is. So when we look at trade agreements, we need to make sure that the intellectual property that those STEM graduates make, it's all done with this really high-powered activity, really super smart people. We need to make sure that's protected by other countries when we trade with them and make sure that their policies reinforce strong growth for jobs here in the U.S. when we make great games here and sell them all around the world. So trade is a critical component for us when we work with people in Washington.
Yeah, and I'm guessing the other part, too, immigration. A lot of tech companies are concerned about making sure you can bring in the available talent, if needed, to work on some of these programs.
It's a worldwide market for games. It's a worldwide market for the talent that makes the games. And if you look at the choices that game companies have to make, they can put the jobs, you know, 100, 200 at a time that are paying, you know, like I mentioned, about $100,000 a year each. They can put those in places where they're going to grow and thrive and where they're going to have an easy access to the market. That could make sense when they look at it for the whole globe, not just in the U.S. And so it's important that that get done right. And we need a free flow of those really talented people in and out of the country in order to run a sophisticated business. So immigration, top of line concern for the industry, very, very important for our growth trajectory.
Mike, good of you to be with us this morning. Thanks for the information.
You bet. Delighted to be here, and happy Halloween.
Same to you. Mike Gallagher, the president and CEO of the Entertainment Software Association. You can find more about them online at theESA.com, the Entertainment Software Association.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Parachute, a Chicago-based startup that helps parents and guardians find local activities for their children, was on Shark Tank over the weekend and got a $500,000 investment offer from shark Mark Cuban. But after the episode was filmed, the deal fell apart when the startup's founder determined the deal terms weren't sufficient. Chicago payment startup Payline Data has been acquired by Pineapple Payments, a Pittsburgh-based payment processing company. Payline launched in 2011 and has been bootstrapped to date. Chicago-based parking app ParkWiz announced today that it has launched an Amazon Alexa service, allowing customers to use voice-activated commands to find, reserve, and pay for parking. And did you know there are nearly 130 co-working spaces in Chicago? Check out ChicagoInno.com for our comprehensive guide on shared workspaces in the Windy City. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome to our program. Back to our program. It's our Halloween edition of The Opening Bell at 540. Do you share your salary with others, maybe in a social situation? With maybe your friends or your family? A new survey says millennials are most likely to do that. And we're happy to have with us this morning from the Cashlerettes, Sarah Berger. That's Sarah's name, blogger online. Sarah, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning.
So that seems like, I mean, when I was growing up, this was something you just never did. You never talked about how much money you made or any of that. Why is this conversation happening?
Right. So kind of put this in perspective, we found that 30% of Americans between the ages of 18 and 36 share their salary with a coworker. And that's in comparison to only 8% of baby boomers. So young people are really sharing their salary with people in the workplace. And I think that there are a few reasons for this. I think that in general, our generation is super comfortable sharing information about ourselves. We grew up with social media. I think that has a huge role in this. I also think that we're currently in this culture that's pushing to close the gender wage gap in the workplace. So I think that's really emboldening young people to come forward and be more transparent about how much they make.
That's a very good point on this. So the conversation might begin how, would you think, among millennials, the biggest group that's doing this? How do you even broach the subject?
I definitely think that you should tread lightly. It can definitely cause friction in the workplace. And I think that you really need to evaluate who you're sharing that information with and how it could potentially affect your relationship with that person. And if you are nervous about causing friction in the workplace, there are resources that you can turn to make sure you are getting paid fairly. Like, you know, Glassdoor and PayScale have great free salary reports where you can, you know, figure out, am I making what I should be making in my field based on my experience? But I think overall talking about money is so beneficial. You're more comfortable with it and it just opens that dialogue up.
And people asking this question should be prepared for an answer that's not really potentially good, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely feel, I think, resentment. You can definitely feel a sense of competitiveness with a friend or a coworker in the same field. So definitely evaluate, you know, who you are sharing this information with and then tread lightly.
With employers, you also bring up a good point with that. They may not like it, but there also may be a backlash with that, right? I mean, is this something that you could potentially lose your job over if you're openly discussing this at work?
There are some protections. There are laws that are applied to some fields that protect you from retaliation when asking about compensation. So definitely talk to your, you know, HR representative at work if you feel like you are being kind of retaliated against for asking those questions, and they should be able to help you out with that. But there are protections in place that should overall protect you from things like that. And I think that also is another reason why maybe, you know, you should tread lightly. A lot of people ask this question to make sure that they are being paid fairly, which could give you a good guideline, but at the same time, you know, your salary is determined on more than just your job title. It's likely also your job performance and your experience, and you need to remember that and that you might not necessarily know how a coworker performs if you're not their manager.
I know in the past on this program, we've actually had a conversation or two about why this might be a good thing for employers to just do out of transparency's sake. Do you find more employers might be considering that or are doing that?
I think that that could be beneficial. I think that being transparent about money is the best route and the best way to go. We all go through the stress of, you know, that entry-level salary and making ends meet. And I think that talking about it can really help with that stress. I know that also there are a few laws in place, like in New York City, for example, that you now cannot ask about someone's previous salary in a job interview. And that's in an attempt to close a gender wage gap. So I think that we're going to start seeing some protections put in place to help make strides towards closing the gender wage gap. So I think that that could be another, you know, route to helping close that gap.
So let's say we have a conversation. I have a conversation with my coworker, and I found out my producer, Bennett, for example, is making more than I am for whatever reason. What do I do with that information? How do I go to my boss and say, hey, you know what? I need a pay raise. What would be the first step there?
I think that every case is different. I personally wouldn't bring up a specific employee and say, you know, I know this person's making more than me. I think it would more so give me the confidence boost I needed to ask for that raise and to bring along evidence as to why I deserve it myself. So bring, you know, solid stats and numbers as to, you know, how you made the company money, how you saved the company money. But knowing that you are underpaid gives you that push to ask for more money that you know you deserve, because it can be scary asking for a raise. And sometimes you just need that confidence boost. But you can also potentially allude to the fact that, you know, I know that I'm getting underpaid, and that could possibly, you know, help you out in that case. But yes.
And the other part of this, too, is with the job market tightening as it is now, and many would say it is tight to the point where we might be a little safer going in and asking for a pay raise.
Yeah, I definitely believe in asking for that raise. And as long as you have the evidence to back up your case as to why you deserve more money, I think that is completely fair. I also think you should bring in alternatives to, you know, if your company is like, we can't afford to give you a raise right now, maybe counter with, okay, I want more vacation time, or I want a spot bonus. There are other options for you, and everyone should be being compensated fairly and getting what they deserve.
You mentioned the gender part of this, gender equity. Are there other instructions for, let's say we're having this conversation, I'm having this conversation with a female counterpart or vice versa. Should we tread even more lightly in that conversation?
I don't necessarily think that. I think that just even getting together with some of your coworkers and swapping salary secrets with, you know, asking your male counterparts how much they make and kind of comparing it to what the females are making can shed some light on how your company is compensating their employees. And again, like, just because, you know, a male coworker is making more than you, that doesn't always necessarily mean you should be making the same amount. It's also based on job performance. But it can definitely be shed some light on that. And I think that the most important aspect of this is just feeling comfortable talking about money. And I'm really excited about these statistics. I think that we're moving in a positive direction. I'm really excited to see what the culture at many companies will be like 5 years from now.
Well, Sarah, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Good information, good conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah Berger is the Cashlerette. You can read more at thecashlerette.com, and make sure you also follow on the Twitter at thecashlerette.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street. Dow futures up 37. NASDAQ and S&P futures higher as well. NASDAQ futures up, by the way, 15 points. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Quite a day in the cattle market at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday as December cattle opened $1.92 higher and closed $2.57 higher. And the October contract, which expires today, trading now with a 500-point limit, ended the day yesterday up $4.20. The December contract was locked limit for much of the session. And lean hogs indicated that cash hog prices would trade lower today. Instead, they trade higher. So all in all, interesting day in the livestock market. Turning to the grain market, soybean futures turned lower yesterday. Forecasts for crop-boosting rains in some areas of Brazil and as technical selling and month-ending positioning weighed on the market. Corn was narrowly mixed and wheat futures fell for a fourth straight session. And the report that Brazilian farmers had sown 30% of the soy area through yesterday, roughly in line with a five-year average, but more than 10 percentage points below planting. Now, what about planting here in the United States? Well, the reports from the USDA afternoon yesterday indicated that 54% of the corn crop has been harvested, compared with a five-year average of 72%. And soybeans, pretty much on schedule, 83% harvested, down a percentage point from the five-year average. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of other stories we're watching for you this morning. Best Buy says it'll offer free shipping for the holiday season, expanding its same-day delivery service as well. The nation's largest electronics chain, which is based in Richfield, Minnesota, says it's waiving the $35 minimum needed for free shipping for the third holiday season in a row. The offer will run through December 25th. It also says it's expanding same-day delivery service to more than 40 markets, up from 25 last fall. In areas where the service is available, shoppers will be able to place an order at 3 p.m. local time and receive the package by 9 p.m. that night for $5.99. Facebook says a Russian group posted more than 80,000 times on its service during and after the 2016 election, potentially reaching as many as 126 million users. The company plans to disclose those numbers to the Senate Judiciary Committee today, according to a person familiar with the testimony. Twitter plans to do the same at the committee, says it has uncovered and shut down 2,700 or more accounts linked to the same group. Russia's Internet Research Agency, which is known for promoting pro-Russian government positions. That number, by the way, is nearly 14 times larger than the number of accounts Twitter handed over to congressional committees just 3 weeks ago. Facebook, Twitter, Google, all testifying at those Capitol Hill hearings today and tomorrow. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, a couple of economic reports out today. The S&P Case-Shiller Index for August is released. Consumer confidence for October also scheduled to be released. The Federal Open Market Committee begins 2 days of meetings with an interest rate decision tomorrow. We do not expect an interest rate hike at the end of the two-day meeting tomorrow. Also today, the Senate Judiciary Crime and Terrorism Subcommittees holds its hearing on extremist content and Russian disinformation online. A bunch of earnings as well today. Aetna, Pfizer, MasterCard, Electronic Arts, Sturm Ruger, and Papa John's all reporting earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday. It's October 31st.